She likes blackberries, being in the mountains, seeing new places, and she's a champion cyclist. She's an HSU Promising Faculty Member. Dr. Amber Gaffney, next on Through the Eyes of Women. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. Hi, my name is Brenda Starr, and I'm your host today on Through the Eyes of Women, and my guest is Dr. Amber Gaffney. Dr. Gaffney received her PhD in social psychology from Claremont Graduate University. She received her undergraduate degree in psychology right here at Humboldt State University. And as an assistant professor at HSU, she's been teaching social psychology and group processes since 2015. And she started a social identity and influence research lab where students can get hands-on experience. Amber, welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, before we get to your passion for teaching and your recent award, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that you grew up here in Trinity County, so you're sort of a local.
Yeah, sort of a local. So I grew up in Trinity County. Some people might have heard of Denny. Most people have not. I know many people who have lived in this area for 20, 30 years and have never heard of it. So that's where I grew up. And I got my undergraduate degree from Humboldt State University. And then I got my PhD from Claremont Graduate University. And I've been really lucky to get to do exactly what I like to do throughout all of that time. So I feel pretty lucky to be back here.
How did you choose your educational goals?
Well, when I was in high school, I thought that I wanted to be an astronomer. My counselor told me that I probably wasn't very good at math, and so I should choose a second career. I said, psychology, there's no math in psychology, right? I didn't have the tools at that point to talk about gender stereotypes and women in STEM fields, so I had no idea about that. I assumed that she was correct, and I started pursuing psychology in college. I have to admit that the first few psychology classes I had, I really did not jive with me. And then I had a psychology statistics class, and I loved it. And then I had research methods, and I loved it. And then I had social psychology, and I was completely sold. So then I continued being a psych major from that. And as soon as my experience at Humboldt State, getting to work with faculty here, that showed me that that was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to produce my own research and to teach in a setting where I could be helpful to students. So the only way for me to be able to do that successfully would be to get a PhD. And I had faculty members who were here who said, you would be a great candidate for a graduate program. And that was the first I'd ever thought of that. But I pursued it because I really like a challenge. So
what kind of student were you?
Well, it depends on what period of my life we are in. That's an excellent question. As a college student, I was always highly motivated if I had a goal. And I guess like everything in my life, I'm kind of all or nothing. So if I don't see a purpose to doing something or I'm not interested, it's nothing, as in 0%. But everything that I, you know, have some type of an interest in, it's usually 100%. So as a student, it was 100% when I decided this was what I wanted to do. And that carried on absolutely through graduate school. But I'm pretty sure that's the only thing that can carry you through graduate school. So
perhaps, too, I mentioned in the beginning about your cycling. You were a champion cyclist. So obviously that caught your attention because, you know, on a scale of 0 to 100, you were right there at 100.
Well, I mean, I'd like to think so with cycling. So, yeah, very competitive, yeah, for sure. And I don't know that I was ever competitive with other people as a student, always competitive for myself. And it was actually the same way when I was doing cycling, you know, highly competitive, but kind of a personal best type of standard. So it was, can I beat my last time when it came to cycling? Can I do this? Can I do this? What is the standard that I set for myself? And can I achieve that standard? And it was the exact same thing through academics. It's actually something that I found in graduate school. I thought, why are there not more professional athletes who are working on their PhDs? Because I saw them as very compatible with one another.
Yes, I see that too, the parallels there. Now, you mentioned that a teacher once said, well, you can't go into astronomy because you're not good in math. Now, statistics, though, however, is a whole different circumstance. And you really, you know, latched on to that. Once you found that, it's like, wait a minute, I can take this to another place as well.
It's amazing what happens when you have people who think you can do something. So if you have a professor, for example, who tells you that you are going to do well in this class or expects that you're going to do well in this class, whether that is a class, because for me, I went into it thinking, oh, I'm not good at this, right? But then you had someone who believed in you, and that makes all the difference in the world, I think. And that is across all domains of life, whether that is athletics, whether that is education, or whatever the case is. So I think that was a big part of it. And my psychology statistics professor, first day of class, said, this is not math. We're going to look at this differently. And we looked at it in a way that allowed us to apply our research. And then, of course, I ended up taking every statistics class that I was imaginable to me at that point. And I did the same thing in graduate school and no longer had that aversion to anything that was math related. But I had to have that experience first, I think.
Well, along with somebody telling you that you can't do something, what are some obstacles that you've encountered along this journey?
I mean, I guess there's always lots of different kinds of obstacles. If you are a kid growing up in a very rural area and you don't see people around you who have, you know, higher education, for example, that can absolutely impact that. If there are stereotypes about the type of people that, you know, you and your family are, given the area where you grew up, that can absolutely impact you. I think those types of things can be challenging. I think always finding a way to kind of believe in your own ability to succeed can be challenging. Although I was pretty lucky starting with the family throughout most of my life, I always had people who really thought, yeah, you can do whatever you want to do. And so that to me made me pretty lucky in that area.
What do you think it is in your personality that attracts a teacher, a professor to say, wait a minute, you know, I think you can do this?
That's a good question. I think for me, that's something that I learned throughout college and looking back on elementary school and before. It was the same thing with people who impacted my life. It was those people who really treated me as if I could succeed. And so for me, it was having good models that as, you know, someone who is now an assistant professor, I would like to give that back. And so I know that I have those types of models. And I think a lot of that is probably based on empathy as well, and kind of understanding the human experience and understanding that people are more than the expectations that we put on them.
Do you have a particular story about one of your mentors that you'd like to share?
I have a lot of mentors throughout my life. So I think sharing one would be particularly difficult. I mean, up through my PhD advisor, who is amazing, but it was just like each step of the way, there's always someone there who's very helpful. So,
well, you and I met about a year ago, and you've also been on Thursday Night Talk with Ellen Fitzpatrick. We're talking about her book was called The Highest Glass Ceiling and trying to break into that, the American presidency. And as we were saying, I think she might need to write a new book now. But we talked a lot about mentors and women in leadership. Did you find along the way there were women who encouraged you to do what you're doing? Because I know that right now, that's how I see you with your students.
That is a really, really nice thing to say, and I thank you for that. Yes, although I don't know that I recognized it straight away. And so certainly once I got into graduate school, so there wasn't a lot of women faculty here when I was here, although Melinda Myers was here and she's still here. So she was definitely inspirational in that setting. When I got into graduate school, I had mentors who were, you know, a teaching mentor who is also a woman, but she had a family and she had impeccable research, very well known for her research, but she was also good to her friends, good to her family, and good to all of the people around her, including the people that she mentored. And she put a lot of time into me and helped to demonstrate kind of work-life balance, which, you know, if you are a person who is an all or none, as I described myself already, you have a tendency to do 100% work and 0% nothing else. So absolutely. And then when I got into cycling, yes, I was surrounded by a lot of strong women, and my coach was really, really good and very supportive of other women, and that was really nice. But one of the things that, you know, as I'm a social psychologist and I've studied gender stereotypes and group behavior and things like this, one of the things that I did note was also the ways in which women can impede each other's success. So, and there's actually just a new article that came out on that in Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin, in which they discuss the ways in which sometimes women who have kind of been in the game for a long time are less likely to promote, you know, new women coming up into that domain because it, you know, might pose a little bit of a threat to their own position. I don't think that's characteristic of just women. We're going to see that in any type of group.
Longevity itself.
That's it. Absolutely. Right.
Long in the tooth, we like to call it.
Yes. And so I think, you know, for those of us who know that type of research, it's really important for us to know where we stand within that. And I do know some of my closest collaborators, for example, whether they are men or women, some of them take a concentrated effort to promote one another and to promote women specifically and, you know, to try to be encouraging to all types of people.
You know, a lot of people are very down on competition, yet we look at the characteristics today where women are able to compete, perhaps maybe not for equal pay, like if we're talking in sports, but the point is, you know, with Title IX, Title VI, the opportunities there to compete. Do you find that that's a new influence now on research, looking back and seeing how from those years, you know, you mentioned that article, you think that has something to do with it?
Yeah, perhaps. And I think one of the questions that probably drove that research specifically was, you know, why don't they get promoted, for example? So I think that was one of the driving factors for that, which is absolutely something that you would see over time. The competition thing with women is incredibly interesting because we're not always, as a woman who is competitive, whether it is in sports or whether it's in her career or whatever the case, she's not always looked at like she's the nicest person in the world, right? It's like, oh, well, you know, she's really good at what she does. She's an amazing athlete, or she is a really good researcher. She is really good at her job. She's an impeccable student, but, you know, she's just not very nice, right? And this is something that women are consistently plagued with because we have a typical idea of what a woman should be like. And when she doesn't meet that, we tend to behave somewhat hostily toward her. So, yeah.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Through the Eyes of Women here on KHSU. I'm your host, Brenda Starr, and my guest is Dr. Amber Gaffney, social psychologist who is a recipient this year of HSU's McCrone Promising Faculty Scholars Award. Let's talk about that award for a minute. Alistair and Judith McCrone, this award is from them. Dr. McCrone was, gosh, for 28 years, I believe he was the HSU president. And number one, can you tell us, do you know who nominated you for the award?
I do. So I had a few folks within the department, so other faculty members in my department who nominated me, which is really nice, including our current chair. So that was really nice to see people who are your colleagues who put you up for something, especially your research. So for me, I love my research. Might have said this, I have a really cool job, so I get to research really cool stuff that takes me to really cool places. To be recognized by your colleagues for that is really nice, and to me it's also indicative of, you know, a desire to support new faculty here, which I think is really cool, and that's kind of the idea behind that award.
I was wondering if, you know, I looked up the eligibility and criteria for that award, and it said tenured or tenure track faculty members. So I'm wondering, hey, did that pop out? It's like, hey, I'm on the tenure track. Just an aside here.
Yeah, well, and I think because I'm a tenure line faculty here for sure, that's one of those things that is helpful. And just, you know, having your work recognized in any manner is really, really nice, I think. And especially by the McCrones, because actually one of the coolest things was how excited he was that I got my bachelor's degree at Humboldt State. It was really neat because I also had a bunch of my students who came to watch me receive the award. And so he got to see me interact with my students there. So that was really neat. And then some of the people who nominated me for the award were some of the same people that encouraged me to get my PhD in the first place. So it was kind of a cool experience.
It was a lovely ceremony for you.
Yeah, it was nice.
Now, there's a cash award with that. I think it's supposed to support a program, creative scholarship or research. So what are you going to do with that money?
I have some ongoing projects right now that it will absolutely contribute to. So likely what those funds are going to go toward is paying research participants for a study that we have that we're about to be starting on minority and majority influence, which is one of my passions of areas of study. And we will be looking specifically at minority and majority's ability to influence one another across religious group boundaries. So we'll be looking at Christians and Muslims and their ability to influence one another and kind of bridge a divide. So that money will be very useful in finding a broad sample of both Christians and Muslims that we might not be able to find specifically in this community, or at least a large enough sample size to hit what we want. So we want them from all across the United States, basically.
So your research and your passion for teaching focus on social identity, group processes, social influencing, and enacting social change.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk a little bit about the Social Identity and Influence Research Lab that you've started. That sounds so fascinating.
Oh, great. You should come to a lab meeting sometime.
Okay.
I think it's really...
When are they?
Well, you will have to hit up my lab manager next semester because we won't have any for the rest of this semester. We usually meet once per week. But it's a group of very, very motivated students who work with me and do research with me. Most of my research... All of my research falls under this kind of social identity umbrella, and I can speak more with you about that if you are interested. But I have projects that I'm really, really passionate about, such as the minority influence and social change stuff. We also have a whole bunch of research. For the last 2 years, I've been collecting data on turns toward political extremism, leadership rhetoric, and how this can contribute to voting for Trump, for example, or voting for Hillary Clinton, or voting for Bernie Sanders. And so we've just have kind of massive amounts of data on all of these things. And for each of the projects, I'm able to bring in students who are also interested in that. And so they get a variety of experience working on those projects in some way or another. And then I also have graduate students who, you know, will pitch to me their own idea, which is really cool. So I get to contribute to work that way. I get a lot of students in there, and they have the unfortunate, I guess, ability to having to hang out with me all the time and talk about research, but that's really what I like to do. So
they have some fun too. Another show that we participated on for Thursday Night Talk was you brought two of those outstanding students with you to the studio, and we talked about how you went to both the Republican convention and the Democrat convention, and the students were doing surveys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that kind of field work. It's pretty extraordinary.
It's really extraordinary. That was a really cool experience. We did a lot of the research on crowd behavior, political demonstration, political protests has been done from a qualitative analysis. So observing behaviors, and you get this really, you know, rich description of behaviors that occur during protests or during demonstration or during political movements. We wanted to do a quantitative analysis, so we created surveys, which was pretty neat, but I had to train the research assistants in how to approach people in the field, and that was really, really neat. And so part of the process was the research part, obviously, that was the biggest part, but the other part was watching how the students became more connected to the political process throughout, and in addition, going into the Democratic National Convention, seeing some of the speakers, things like that, you got to see this kind of turn and how the students really looked at the political process in general, which I really appreciated.
How do you, when you observe your students, when you have to step back and look, take the long view, how does that make you feel?
Good. I mean, just to put it very simply, good. One of the nice things about working with students is working with people who haven't thought about these things for a really, really long time, or they might have thought about them, but from a completely different perspective. So they're not just thinking about things, okay, well, according to the research, and absolutely everything has to be done theoretically according to the research for it to be science, but you get some really creative ways of looking at the research, which I always selfishly say makes me a better researcher when I surround myself with diversity and creativity. So,
well, selfish, but what a learning tool. And also the light that goes on when they realize the connectedness of that.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest things, too. I mean, you just see that in the classroom experience, right? When you see someone get something or, you know, demonstrating to someone, yes, you're a human being, you hold biases, and a lot of people aren't willing to recognize that they hold biases until you show them that they hold biases, and then you see the recognition, and then you see, oh, what can I do about this, which is the next step. And that's a really neat thing.
Lately, it seems like that has really popped up in society in a big, big way. So now your laboratories, which are not theories anymore, they could see the practicality of that throughout our society and through the world.
Yes.
I mean, that's quite an amazing laboratory there.
Yeah, the whole world. Absolutely.
The whole world's watching and the whole world can be surveyed. One of the things I wanted to talk about is that you are going to be a guest host for Through the Eyes of Women, and we're very, very happy about that.
Thank you.
What kind of guest do you want to talk to?
Well, I would like to talk to all kinds of guests, to be honest with you. So, like I said, once again, through my own self-interest, it makes me more creative to talk to interesting people. But, you know, there are locally, and then maybe not so locally, some people that I would love to speak to get their unique perspective on feminism, for example, or their unique perspective about the experience of being a woman. And it would also be neat to get some of those experiences, even from some of our students here, because we face a variety of issues on college campuses. And then we face a variety of issues that are unique to Humboldt State, whether, you know, you have students who are women and identify, and students who are people of color, right? We have a lot of issues on this campus that need to be addressed. And sometimes you read about it in the paper, and that's interesting. That's what's going on at HSU. But then when you hear someone actually talk about it and you hear how that affects her life, that's a big deal. So I think that that could be really helpful for not only, you know, students here, but for the broader community to kind of understand some of the actual experiences that people have.
And it gives you an opportunity to hit a larger number of people. The students that you have now, are they all psychology majors? Do you get some from cross?
So all of the students who work in my lab with me are all psychology majors, but in my social psych class, I teach social psychology, I occasionally get some students who are non-psych majors. So this semester, for example, I have an anthropology major. That's been really cool because specifically with the cultural anthropology stuff, it's really nice for us to kind of bounce stuff off of each other because he's a great student. We can bounce stuff off, and then, you know, he gets it on this different level of analysis, which I love to see, right? Because the level of analysis is going to be different between anthropology and psychology for sure. But just get it on that level, which is neat. I mean, I don't get a ton of non-majors, mostly psych people.
But all disciplines could use that class.
Well, I'd like to think so, but yeah.
I'd like to think so too. Okay, if you were to do a commercial for your class, interdisciplinary, what would it be? Put you on the spot here.
Come hear this woman rant about theories. Yeah. I think that could get a few people in. I mean, I think the importance that I see of social psychology, but it's, you know, it's going to be the same across any domain, to be honest with you. But the importance of what I see and one of my goals, I know that not everyone who takes a class in social psychology is going to go on to be a PhD in social psychology. Right? That was a ridiculous expectation. But one of the things that I hope that I can give to people is a way of understanding their own biases and their own place within the world and saying, oh, yeah, sometimes I am part of the problem, but this is what I can do to change that. Or this is some of the issues that, you know, we are facing as a society. And here's some of the things that I can do to change that. So, and obviously, I want them to know about some really, really great research and theories. But I think even bigger than that, and probably just a college experience in general, is learning your own place within the world and the contributions that you make, both good and bad, and how you can work on that.
Well, I can understand why you got that award.
You're too nice.
There were a couple of other people who got that award. Want to talk about them for a second?
Oh, who got the award at the same time I did? Yeah, they were actually both hired at the same time that I was hired, which was kind of nice. And I actually hadn't seen either of them in quite some time because, you know, I work out a lot and I work a lot. And so if something's outside of those domains, then I don't often see it. So it was really nice to see them and to hear more about their research in depth.
What I find very interesting is that you all came together.
Yeah.
And that says a lot for this university.
Yeah. Well, and to, you know, see some of the, you know, new people that the university has been bringing in. And that's been really neat. So our department, specifically in psychology, we've had so many great new hires when it comes to psychology faculty who do cool research across the domain. So, you know, the more new folks that you get in here, the more new ideas that you get, and should make for a better place.
And a better world when we can apply some of the research, some of those statistics, some of the surveys to an application of real life. You know, that's where we want to move forward to. And I think that's one of the ways that we can move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you so much. And congratulations on your award.
Thank you so much.
And I just want to say that once again, that you will be joining Through the Eyes of Women as a guest host. And you got to stay tuned for that, people. I've been your host, Brenda Starr, and I've been speaking with Dr. Amber Gaffney, a Humboldt State University assistant professor teaching social psychology and a 2017 recipient of the McCrone Promising Faculty Scholars Award. As I said, Amber will be joining Through the Eyes of Women as a guest host, so stay tuned. For more information, you can visit amber.gaffney@humboldt.edu or call 707-826-4313. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Jessica Eden, and to the entire Through the Eyes of Women team. To listen to this program again, visit our permanent blog at khsuwomen.com, where you can also learn more about the show and post listener comments. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.